This is Radio Dreaming.
In my dream, I climbed Belmore Mountain and heard my name echoing out from the caves at Polygollum. In my dream, I danced with the giant and slept in his grave. In my dream, I prayed at the high cross and traced the wraith-fad cup and ring stones with my fingers. In my dream, I drank the cool, fresh water from the salmon's well and listened to the linnet bird sing her sweet song. In my dream, I crossed the stile and sat with Margaret in her little thatch cottage beside a big open turf fire.
There is an ancient Celtic tradition that says the land remembers everything. In Radio Dreaming, we explore dreams of place and how lands speak through dreamers.
I'm Anna.
I'm Claire. Join us now in the borderlands of Erra and Northern Ireland to meet the people, places, creatures and things of Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark.
Radio Dreaming Episode 2, Wild Dreams and the Mythical Fabric of the Land.
Chapter 1, Wild Dreams and Biodiversity.
Cabadu Lahain, Brian Gloidi Fiona, agus Bihag Sulacht.
Even living our domesticated existences in lands we've tamed, our dreams continue to remain as wild places within us.
Because, you know, we have these dreams at night, Claire and me, we can't remember them. It's actually sometimes hard to catch a hold of them and bring them back out, isn't it? Pull them back out. So, you know, like a wild creature, some kind of mammal that you don't see, like a pine marten, I've never seen one. They're out there, but they're nervous and they're timid.
Ian Sturdy suggested that we went and saw these ravens that like to play on the thermals up on one of the crags. He told us to really try and sneak up on them, to pretend that we were a shape so that we could get to see what their lives are like without frightening them. And we thought it's a little bit like that with dreams and ideas. Like sometimes we feel they're almost fugitive, that they don't want to be caught, that they're wild. And we need to be a little bit more stealthy and find a way we can disguise ourselves so that they will reveal themselves and not be afraid.
When you're walking, you tend to have quite tunnelled vision sometimes. You know, you look straight ahead. For that, you really need peripheral. You're looking all around you. So, for example, at the trees, in the trees, you will see signs of deers. You'll notice their antler marks on the trees if you look close enough. What you become more in tune to doing is not taking everything necessarily at face value. You have to broaden the spectrum of what it is you're actually looking for and what you're trying to find. So you become more in tune to kind of scoping and scanning the whole area, I suppose. But once you get your eye in and know what it is you're looking for, then you can actually see. So say if we do take the mammals, for example, mammals, as you know, obviously are quite elusive. Most of them are nocturnal. Unless you're willing to do an abundance of field work during the night time, you're not really going to be able to get the opportunity to see them. So what you become more in tune to are looking at the tracks, the sounds, the sights, the physical evidence that there may actually be something here. Like, or even knowing the mammals well, knowing what are they going to look for. Like, if I was to survive here, what would I do? And then that way you're more in tune to thinking maybe along the right track.
Yeah, You know, go back in towards Whirling Bear.
Okay.
You come to a bridge, and I think maybe a field in there, maybe on the right hand side. Maybe.
Okay, yeah, I
see. No, I'm not sure. It may be on this road at all. It could be on the other road.
What have you found?
Oh, just nice saxifrage.
The starry saxifrage is interesting because it's an Arctic alpine relic species plant, which means that it has been here like 15,000 years since the end of the last ice age, and this is its last reduct really. It can't grow higher up because the conditions aren't wet enough, and it can't grow lower down because the temperatures are higher.
A great technique to fast dream ourselves into place is to meet experts in their natural habitat. We meet biodiversity officer Rose Kremen in the education room at Marble Arch Caves Visitor Center.
And for example, these two butterflies are a priority species.
Right.
So they would be species that have UK action plans.
So that's fritillary. And
the marsh fritillary and the dingy skipper.
Like the gait or gist of a butterfly, our place dreamer's attention wanders all over the place, and it alights on Rose's cream waistcoat, which is slightly fuzzy. Does she wear a furry, burry waistcoat to collect specimens, we wonder?
I'm just looking at your top.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just thinking, like, when you walk around and, like, all the pollen maybe goes on it.
Yeah.
And then you could actually examine what's
I don't know, wear something that attracts pollen.
This concept prompts us to consider innovative ways and places to capture dreams, even entire dream collection suits.
We had an idea that you could actually have a costume if you're a biologist to collect some of the things that they are interested in. So was it going to catch things that
you would open up your wing basically. Usually they just use like a tarp. Yes. Or something that they put on the ground.
The
idea would be that you'd be able to wear everything you needed sort of to collect evidence of biodiversity. So you'd open up your wings, you'd shake the tree limbs, and all the biodiversity evidence would fall on your wings.
And you'd be wearing a crash helmet.
And then you'd... right.
Just in case.
Yeah. In case it was a red squirrel.
Yeah, in case it's a red squirrel, not just like a moth.
Chapter 2, Daydreaming and Night Thinking.
Cabadolodó, Brian Glóidí de Ló, agus Muin Tús Tuia.
Sometimes your body doesn't know what it's doing when it's sleeping, does it?
Your brain doesn't really work when
it's
sleeping.
It's kind of checked out.
Daydreaming is thinking, because night dreaming is night thinking.
There are as many different dreaming techniques as there are dreamers. Here, Anna tells us about her mum's use of snapshot dreams.
She says that when she goes to bed at night, every single night, she kind of allows herself a snapshot of her childhood, almost like a photograph and that she can look at. And they might be things that she's not consciously aware of, that she can hardly remember. And because she does it every day, she must have had all these snapshots of her childhood. And sometimes she says, oh, today I just looked down and, you know, I could see my brown shoes and I remember those shoes because it went with my going away outfit.
I would have daydreamed an awful lot, because as well as that, you know, one teacher can't get around all those people and keep them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would have dreamed, there used to be a donkey out in the field, and I used to envy this donkey because it was out in the field and I wasn't, you know. I remember looking through my hair, because I had really golden hair. I mean, this is now out of a bottle, but, and it was long, I had long, very long hair.
I could pull it down and I could look at all the rainbow colours through the sunlight, you know, the sunlight shining on my hair. Mm. I used to do that endlessly. Kind of prison me things, yes, wonderful colours.
I was on a caving expedition to Ethiopia in 1995. We were caving every day for 5 weeks, and I certainly started dreaming about caves, and some of them were quite scary, of being flooded in a cave or being lost in a cave. Or But it was all my concerns and worries were coming out in my dreams.
Mm.
These were things I was thinking about during the day. It wasn't perhaps bothering me during the day, but maybe I was hiding it, but at night time all my concerns and fears were flooding back out at me. And the most amusing thing was that on the way home after that expedition, I mentioned this to a few other people on their team, and they all confessed that after the second or third week, they all started dreaming about caves, but they were all dreaming about things going wrong in caves.
Yeah.
And I think they were doing exactly the same. Their concerns and their fears were just being put at the back of their mind. But when they were asleep, they were all coming forward very vividly.
Chapter 3. Chance Encounters and the Power of Happenstance.
Capital 3. Castol de Hashme agus Cuacht na Chinúna.
Chance encounters smell of sweet spontaneity, feel like a hand-carved walking stick, sound like the chirp of the oracle wren, and look like the two botanists that we happened to meet on our way up Kulka Mountain.
Sorry, you're being very patient. I'm happy with you being here, but if you feel you...
We are interested in doing, because we wouldn't know about this kind of stuff if we didn't have happened upon you guys, or if you we had left a few minutes earlier.
They used to be the crow fields. Each one in the village had a place for a crow out there for their milk, you understand that? He says, I was out in the cow fields. He says, the little folk were there, he says, you know. And they were there and they were playing wonderful music. And they were dancing, and I kept quiet for an age, he says. And then suddenly they saw me and they just disappeared, you know. And we used to say to them, Paddy, when you're going out, would you bring us out someday and we'll see these? Well, now, you'd have to be very quiet, he says, you know.
Chance encounters are a part of our memories and dreams. Claire remembers this from her childhood.
Hello.
There was a guy who was cycling across the United States one time, and you know, like my mom for some reason felt comfortable to just stop and approach him. And so she just stopped and invited him, and he just camped out on our living room floor, and then he ate 30 pancakes next morning. You know, and then he sent us like a postcard when he got back home to New York. It builds trust between people. That was, for me, that was a lesson where you can trust your instinct to depend on someone else or to make yourself vulnerable to someone else. and there's a wonderful exchange and connection that's made with people.
Making breakfast and doing our collaborative drawing are public actions that invite people to ask what we're doing and which lure them into our project.
Collaborative drawings are a place of potential, isn't it, where chance encounters happen, kind of like happenstance. On paper, the participants are Claire, Anna, paper, pen, and the place where you're doing the drawing. They're all participants. Okay.
Mm-hmm. One day we decide to draw all day, but instead a man on his morning dog walk stops to tell us about his daredevil exploits. Apparently, he has used his flick-through photographic memory to make life-saving decisions in perilous situations.
So a journey today, or in our case, doing a project, is a chance for us to meet other people and have chance encounters and to learn along the way.
This weed plant is wood sorrel. Now, the Irish mythology is that when St. Patrick was bringing Christianity to the Irish and he was giving his missions in the forest clearings and he was explaining the Trinity, the three persons of one God, he picked up shamrock, which is really a clover, and explained that there's three leaves here, but it's really the one plant. And the Irish mythology was that it was the shamrock or a clover, and furthermore that this plant grows only in Ireland, it won't grow in pagan England or America or anywhere like this. And hence we have St. Patrick's Day event in Washington, where Irish Taoiseach presents a bowl of shamrock or clover, the American president. In actual fact, if that story were right, there would not have been any clover in the forest clearings in the 5th century. It's more than likely it's this plant, wood sorrel, he would have used. We have a great capacity for myth-making. That's why we're such good storytellers.
Yeah, good storytellers.
And writers and artists.
Chapter 4. Becoming Landscape Detectives.
Cabadul Chiahar, Blachtrín Tírdrecha.
This place has seen
every shade of green,
turmoil under its roots,
darkness falling from the sky in a blaze,
a tiny man in a waistcoat silhouetted against a white horse,
an epic game of chess,
sun-warmed oats sprinkled into a hollow,
a knife blade broken in two,
layering of memories on bones and seeds and quietness.
Sometimes altering perspective is simply a matter of scale.
And as Claire's speaking, she has a couple of ants walking along the brim of her hat.
Anything else growing up there?
No, there's one on the walking on the ripples, which are almost like the ripples that have been left by the glaciers as they moved across the landscape, the drumlins. The ants experimenting with that at its own scale. And there's another one further up near the top, which could be the top of the mountain for the ant. And there are two little breathing holes, so Claire's hair keeps cool. One of the ants is walking around fairly near, and I'm wondering if he's going to fall into that sinkhole and be dragged down into another world.
We propped up our bikes at the bottom, didn't we? And then we put our helmets on to climb up the tree because we were worried about falling out. And then I think we were working out where we could go in the tree and where we could sit, where it was comfy. And I think we just wanted to do a dreaming or just have a little kit.
Something curious happened to us on the Crom estate. Cradled in the mossy lap of an ancient oak tree, we literally became human talismans.
The idea of a talisman is that it alters the perception of the thing that is holding the talisman. But we're kind of doing another take on it, aren't we? We're trying to imagine what the tree would feel like if we were its talismans.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think a human talisman would do for a tree? How do you think it would change its perspective?
if I were a tree holding a person, it might make me more aware of human things and a human scale instead of my scale as a huge tree.
It'd be feeling the sort of slight weight of us, and it would notice that we settled in its crooks and hollows, wouldn't it? Like a bird. I mean, do you think it would think of a bird as a talisman? We don't know that animals and other plants have talismans. We don't know, do we? They could do things they think are lucky, like an ant as it goes collecting something, you know.
Anthills are one of the best places to find turquoise beads from native peoples. Whether or not ants differentiate between a turquoise bead and a little pebble is anyone's guess, but that's often where you'll find little turquoise beads as they're collected as part of an ant pile.
Speaking as if you are a familiar object from your life is a good way to leap right into its world.
I am a combination of wonderful craftsmanship and shoddy workmanship combined, where people have taken me apart and put bits of me together from other things, and people have dropped me and repaired me, and I've got marks that were put on me, like, purposefully to make me look more cool and old. So some of me is very cosmetic, and yet other bits are from wear and tear. Bits have been worn away from all the people holding me, because it requires so much concentration to play me or to get anything decent out of me that I can be a tool then for someone to go to another sphere of their mind.
About the sand contours, and you're standing here on quite a small island, I think, and hearing the sounds of the water dripping down, and then kind of visualising myself above and all the clouds of sound rising up from the land with the birdsong and thing, and kind of stopping or at least changing at the edge of the island. The water around it, and then the sound coming off like the next one or the island,
or like the rings on a lake, you know, going out and intersecting.
Something special about islands, almost like a planet in the solar system or something.
We use the Place Dreamer visualising tool to discover more about the recent past, ancient past, present and future of people, places and things.
So while I was dreaming in the tree, I didn't sleep because I was a little bit worried about falling off, and an image came to me of a little girl, probably about 8 or 9, in a little outfit, probably from maybe just a couple hundred years ago, a little kind of white, pink and yellow dress, climbing up the tree with a basket of sandwiches with butter and blackberry jam on them, folded neatly into a little basket with a napkin. And then she sat up right where we were sitting here, and one of the little depressions between the branches of the tree. And she sat there and looked around and ate her sandwiches.
Train yourselves to be landscape architects.
One of the methodologies we're using is visualisation. We both lie down and try and find out more about this place. Right, how would I approach this settlement? And I just imagine myself walking up, and I went with the very first thing I had in my head, which is what I'd do if I was doing automatic writing, say, or doing a drawing. Just go with it. So I imagine I was coming in from the north up to the settlement, up to the burren, and I could see a house that I know is there. There's an oval house, which is a Neolithic house. I saw someone with a long stick walking out with a variety of dogs, some taller ones looking a bit more like hunting dogs, and some little ones that could have been ratters, but they actually had quite thick black fur, a bit curly, which is a bit unexpected. So then, because I woke up today with a headache, I thought, oh, well, I could visit maybe like a curandera, like a healer that I know they would have had in their settlement. So I went into the hut, and there was an old lady in there, and I lay down in the bed. I was surprised when, because I had a headache, that she started at my stomach area. And then what I do remember really well is then she had like a long cord, and she laid it like from my head right down to my feet. And then I think she did a knot in the middle, and she might have done one up by my neck. And then she put kind of thick sheet or blanket over the top. And then she pulled out the cord from the bottom. All I can imagine is that maybe that brought out the pain or whatever was causing me the ill, whatever her beliefs were. So that was quite interesting, and I wonder if they could have used that.
Radio Dreaming is edited and produced by Anna Kelleher and Claire Cote. For more about this project, please visit the Dreaming Place blog and online archive, www.dreamingplace.eu.
Dreaming Place was supported by National Lottery through Arts Council England and Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark.
Special thanks to Diane Henshaw, Richard Watson, Martina O'Neill, Les Brown, Seamus aka Jim Nolan, Rose Kremen, Dave Scott, the Draper of Black Lion, Ian Sturdy, Hannah and Robert Northridge, Leslie and Marilyn, Michael McGordle, the Young Poet, Margaret Gallagher of Bow, Helen Sharp of Crom, Bridget McGuire and Joe and Aiden of Galoon Island, as well as Anita McCune, Miriam DeBorca, and Ruby DeBorca Connolly, who speak the English headings, and Tara Boy Mooney and Mona Crow, who speak the Irish Gaelic headings. Our thanks also for exceptional musical contributions by Susan Hughes on fiddle, the Buskers of Bleak, the McKinney Sisters, the McConnell Brothers, and the Birds, Insects, Trees, Fires, Bogs, Paddles, Breezes, Lakes, Rivers, and Rain of Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark.
Beagilin on Hirdurella.radio na Hushlinga.
Join us next time for Radio Dreaming.